Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for just for the moment. We have with us today and this evening Sarah Leslie, and we're going to be talking about the most dangerous movement that has swept the church in probably 1,000 years or more. And this is something called the Church Growth Movement. Now, it really sounds great. Who could be against churches being successful? Who could be against churches having an outreach and influence across our society? But the question is this going to be an influence for better or for worse? Well, the leaders of this organization talk about transforming the individual, transforming the church, transforming American society. And they talk about transforming the world, which is really sort of a pretty widespread idea. And yet they're in the process of doing this. We get communications from people all throughout the Australia and from New Zealand and certainly all across America. People are going to churches, and suddenly the minister now takes off his coat, puts on a sports shirt, begins to dress casually. One of the our friends called me recently to tell us that the husband had gone to the church, and 15 minutes into the sermon, the minister stopped the sermon, invited everybody to go next door to get Swedish meatballs and lunch, and then kept bring it back into the sanctuary to finish eating. It's sort of a casual approach to Christianity. Swedish meatballs and the sermon go together. Nothing against Swedish meatballs. I love them, but is this really what we want to do with the Christian church? Well, we want to make it more popular. We want to make it more like the world. We want to make the music of the church more like the world. We don't want anybody really to feel that they're sinners that really need a Savior. After all, God loves everybody, and everybody's going to go to heaven. And, well, but is that really the message of the gospel? Is that the message that the martyrs died for and have given their lives for throughout the world? Or is there perhaps there's a conscious effort to change both the music and the message of the church? Well, Sarah Leslie has done a wonderful job of researching the background of the guru who is behind the people who are behind what's going on today. And this is an organization that has moved, trained, and I'm speaking now of the Willow Creek Church and Saddleback Church in Southern California, have trained over 350,000 Protestant ministers and laymen in this wonderful new idea. Wouldn't it be wonderful to transform the world? But behind this is a man named Peter Drucker. Who is Peter Drucker? Well, Sarah Leslie is going to tell us about it. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
It's great to be back, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you tell our listeners who don't know anything about you just a little bit about your background, because you've been researching these very subjects for some years, and we've had you on our program for a number of issues in the past. But let's talk a little bit about yourself. How did you get into researching and trying to understand what was going on in the world?
That's a long story. No, I got involved in the Right to Life movement during the 1980s. And then during the 1990s, I was involved in the homeschool movement and became one of the researchers on education reform around the country. And my husband and I ended up publishing a number of things, including the Christian Conscience magazine and ultimately Charlotte Disterbeet's book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. And in the process, we also began researching some of the transformation of the church, because we started noticing the parallels between what we were seeing in education reform and what we were seeing in church reform. And sure enough, our worst fears have been confirmed, that a lot of the same players behind the scenes that were the architects of education reform are actually one and the same individuals who have architected the church transformation that we see going on, especially with the purpose-driven church model, the missional model, the systems model, the Saddleback, the Willow Creek. There's tons and tons of names for it, but it's basically the same plan and the same program. And I always tell people, whenever you see the words purpose-driven, just think outcome-based, and that will help you to understand what you're looking at.
Well, of course, the purpose of outcome-based education is to change the ideas, the values, the beliefs of our children. Is this what the movement within the church is aimed at?
Yes, actually it is. It's to change your attitudes, opinions, beliefs, values, behaviors, and it's to change how you see the world. You're not going to get the traditional gospel anymore. I know a number of discernment ministries, Barrett Chose, for example, have done wonderful commentaries critical of the shortened, abbreviated gospel message that's so watered down and fairly recognizable in these new seeker-sensitive type churches.
Well, I think that certainly one of the great theologians of our time is John MacArthur, who has churches in Southern California, and he's done a 5-hour video on this subject. You can get it. We don't carry it, unfortunately, but you can get it through a place called Cross TV. It's actually 1-877-CROSS-TV. And what John MacArthur points out, and he has his own theological seminary there, as well as a very, very successful church, he points out that this same basic concept, although not certainly not with a management overview of the management component, and the courses 101, 201, and 301, and signing the contract, and all of these things, and the idea of driving people out of the church if they wouldn't go along with this. But this idea of watering down the gospel was something that happened in Great Britain 100 years ago. And this is what Charles Spurgeon, the great English orator, a great English minister, spoke out against. And, of course, he was so viciously attacked, it broke his heart, and he died shortly thereafter. But he cried to say, this will destroy Christianity. You water down the gospel, you change the gospel of Jesus Christ, why, you're going to destroy the church. And today, the churches of England, for all intents and purposes, are dead. Probably not more than 2 or 3% at the most of England considers themselves Protestant evangelicals, and yet, of course, at one time, England was the great bastion of Protestant Christianity in the Western world. And it was from the Protestant Christianity of Great Britain that the Protestant Christianity of the United States came. So who is Peter Drucker? What is his goal? And what is his method by which he means to transform not only corporate management, not only our educational system, but the church itself?
Well, Peter Drucker is actually a fascinating man. He has very few critics. If you go out on the internet and try to find writings that are critical of anything he's ever written or said, you'll be hard-pressed to find anything critical. He's a guru. A number of people ascribe that term to him, and I believe he's even ascribed it to himself upon occasion. And I was just recently watching a video where you can actually see people fawning over him. He's 94 years old. He has lived for the most part of the last century. He grew up in Vienna, and his parents were part of an elite group of intellectuals called the Vienna Circle. And this was a group of people, the most notable name that people would recognize is Sigmund Freud, who decided to take the esoteric ideas from German mystics of the 1800s and philosophers and turn them into political and social and economic realities for the 20th century. They wanted to change the very nature of man, and they wanted to change all of the institutions of man and create a whole new, well, utopia is what they were aiming at here on Earth. And so his parents were very influential in his early life. He ended up going on to England and eventually to the United States. And by this time, he had conceived an idea that corporations, which have particular mystical significance in German history, would become an organism that would meet all of your human needs for community. And so he set up this concept of a corporation idea in which you would go to your workplace and it would meet your needs for health care, medicine, your social needs, all of your life needs. Well, ultimately the Americans rejected it, Now, the Japanese didn't, by the way. The Japanese embraced Drucker. And when Deming came over with his total quality management, they embraced Deming. It was the same plan. And that's because the Japanese already had the mystical framework with which to embrace this idea that man is not an individual, but only can be viewed as part of this organism.
And I think it's so important that people understand that America was built upon the individual. In other words, we were individuals, we were answerable only to God. And, of course, we would work for an employer, but our loyalty, first loyalty, was to God. The whole idea of these other ideas is we are all part of the group. We are all part of the team.
Yes.
We will subject our individualism to the benefit of the group, and by so doing, we then become part of this whole. And they looked upon this as sort of a mystical organism. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, it's totally contrary to the Reformation. If you go back and study Martin Luther and the early Anabaptists, both threads of church history, one constant thread. That you see in their theology was that man was directly accountable to God. We were unique human individuals, and that we were worthy because we were created in the image of God. What Peter Drucker has proposed is a total reversal of that, that our worth is being viewed by him totally in economic terms. He wrote a book in the 1960s, I believe, in which he redefined man as knowledge capital and a knowledge worker. And what he meant by that is whatever knowledge you possess, that is what your worth is. That's what your value, your resource to society, as well as to the corporation, is based on what you know. Well, you can see where that goes. You can immediately start seeing where that goes, because there are some people in our society who don't possess that kind of knowledge capital, that value on their life. And Peter Drucker set out to recruit these knowledge workers into the corporations, and ultimately now he's working with the mega churches around the country to recruit knowledge workers, knowledge capital people, into these mega churches because he believes they can transform society.
And this is really what it's all about, but first of all, you have to transform the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, how then will you transform the individual? Well, the small group, dialectic group, is an important part of that, isn't it? When you begin to identify this group, and when you join the church or you're part of the church, you have to sign a contract to go along with the group, and certainly not to oppose the group. And then you begin to build relationships in the group. And, of course, once you are part of this and your relationships are there, they even have this calculated that if you have 7 friends in the group or in the church, you will never leave the church. And it's all about how you can use the church to manipulate the individual. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, that's actually true. When Peter Drucker failed with the corporations in America, because thankfully Americans were still pretty independent, and didn't go along with this idea of the corporation meeting every life need, he turned his attention to the private sector. And since the late 1970s on, he has devoted a huge amount of his time towards transforming education and the church, what he calls the private sector.
But, of course, he did have some success with the corporations, didn't he? Didn't he work for General Motors for a time?
Yes, actually, he did. He transformed the corporation. But he's taken the exact same model and taken it to the church now, so that the church has become something that's customer driven, and the church is now being filled with business management techniques and marketing strategies, and the entire presentation of the gospel, evangelism as we have known it, is being turned upside down on its head and being turned into a marketing extravaganza, with every sophisticated technique in the book being used. And these people have a philosophy of pragmatism, that the end justifies the means, and that somehow this superficial, I call it glitz, glitter, and glamour, you know, the whole marketing mania is going to justify what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's all built upon manipulation, and then you get the people in and you keep them busy. You have special courses to determine their spiritual gifts, and then they are expected to spend time working at the church. In fact, I had this one woman call me, and said that, you know, she and her husband were drawing further and further apart because she wouldn't go to this church, and her husband was so wrapped up in this that she just felt there was this increasing barrier between them. And it wasn't until he had actually listened to some of the tape sets we have and heard the video we offer called Diaprax in the Church, a two-hour video by Dr. Robert Klink that goes into the occult foundation of all of these ideas, because this is largely built upon the philosophy of a man named Hegel. Those of you who studied philosophy will recognize there was another man who was very influenced by Hegel. His name was Karl Marx. In fact, communism is taught in universities is Hegelian dialectics and Feuerbach's materialism. It is dialectical materialism of Hegel and Feuerbach. And so what they've done is taken Hegel's concepts and introduced them into the Christian church in the name of changing the individual, in the name of bringing them closer to God. Well, don't they teach the Word of God? Don't they bring people closer to God, Sarah?
Well, I wish I could say that they do, but I think we would see results in society immediately if there was a true revival going on. One of the important parts to understand is that Peter Drucker was a mentor to Rick Warren. The purpose-driven church didn't just arise from out of nowhere, but the purpose-driven church was an idea that came from the influence and the direct hand of influence of Peter Drucker. And it's one of his babies. It's one of the churches that he's nurtured across the country to invent this new private sector. And he envisions this artificial community as meeting all of your life needs. And he envisions the church as a whole different structure than what we have traditionally understood it in the scripture.
And, of course, they have a special program for anybody who doesn't want to go along with it. What do they do to people who object or simply say, what's going on, or begin to question what's happening?
Well, Peter Drucker has a philosophy called abandonment. And in the business world, this makes a lot of sense. I mean, a lot of his ideas really work in the business world. He calls it abandonment. And if you have a program that doesn't work, you simply abandon it. If you've got some part of your business that isn't producing results, it's not profitable for you, it's not succeeding, well, you just shut it down. You just quit doing it. And it makes a lot of sense. It's just common sense. But when you take that into the church and into the private sector, here's what happens. Let's say you run a food pantry, and it's open from the hours of 9 to 5. And you decide to follow the advice of Peter Drucker, and you conduct a survey of when all your customers, quote-unquote, come in to get their canned goods and dry goods, and you notice that between the hours of 3 and 5 in the afternoon, you don't have very many customers. So you decide to abandon those hours. You just literally shut those down and decide you're only going to open your food pantry during the hours of 9 to 3. Well, in the church charity business, one of the things we forget is that Jesus went after that lost sheep. And perhaps the people who came in from 3 to 5 was the elderly widow. That was the only time she had a ride. Or maybe it was the woman coming home from work on the bus route, and this was the only time the bus went by your storefront charity. And so we forget about human compassion as soon as we start applying abandonment to our Christian ministry.
Well, of course, one of the things is to drive people out of the church who object to what's going on. Would that be a
purpose? Oh, yes. That's another purpose of abandonment, yes.
And of course, they really do. They will drive you out of the church. You will be told that you're not wanted there anymore, and you may have been there all of your life. This may have been your church. You may have invested very heavily in it. But, of course, if you object to what's going on, there's no Christian charity. You've got to go, because the management technique is what it's all about. And human compassion, as we know it, simply goes out the window. It's the most amazing thing of what happens to people when they see success, especially financial success. And these people seem to have much more value to that than in faithfulness to God. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Sarah Leslie, and you've done a lot of studying on Peter Drucker. So, certainly, what's your impression of him? He's 94 years old. He has had a profound impact on industry and corporations. He's had even a more definite influence on our educational system, which has dumbed down generation after generation of our children. And now he is turning to the church. Now, is he trying really to push these ideas of excellence as far as, knowledge of scriptures, and of course knowledge of the Word of God is concerned? Or is he using the Word of God to pursue a different agenda?
Well, he looks like everybody's grandfather. I mean, he just looks like this wonderful, nice old man when you see him. However, when you start reading his literature, you quickly find out that his ideas, while maybe on the surface might sound really good, underneath the surface they're poison. They're very dangerous ideas. He came up with the idea that society had this three-legged stool, and in it he defined the corporation as one of the legs, and he defined the state as one of the legs, the government, and then he defined the private sector as one of the legs. But the more you read into what he's writing, you quickly realize that there's really only one leg, and that is the state. This is the man who architected No Child Left Behind, education reform. He was the man behind David Hornbeck. And if you remember, when they came through with education reform, what was No Child Left Behind based on? It was based on the idea that you had to meet the outcomes. You have to produce results. And this is little children taking tests that we're talking about. And these are measurable results that have been predefined, cast in concrete, and written into assessments that all look alike all across the country. And the same thing is happening with the private sector. He is telling the private charities and foundations that they have to have measurable results, that they have to be effective, that they have to be accountable. And so structures are rapidly being put in place across the entire globe right now to ensure that ministers have these systems of accountability. It has nothing to do with traditional church accountability where you might be accountable to other brethren that you fellowship with. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about accountability in the same sense that we see accountability with the testing that's done with No Child Left Behind, the NAEP test, for example. And they're demanding that ministers produce results. Well, of course, results are being measured in different ways than the traditional ways. And they're looking at the numbers. In fact, as you mentioned, it's the high-impact numbers, that spiritual multiplication where you're rapidly recruiting people in these cell churches. It's almost like an Amway structure. It's network marketing techniques that they're using. And it's a dumbed-down, watered-down, totally neutralized gospel that it doesn't preach any kind of a hard message of repentance anymore. So this is the system that they're putting in place all over the globe as we speak. And the next phase of it is actually to send out some of these knowledge workers from Saddleback and some of these other big mega churches and mandate that they do short-term mission trips or community service. And unfortunately, this all fits hand in glove with the faith-based initiative.
All right, hold on right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sarah has been telling us about these ideas that basically have the same concepts as Amway, but we've introduced them into the church. You get people in, you get them enthusiastic, you get them, of course, all wound up with trying to push these new and wonderful ideas that are going to change the world. Well, we'd all like to change the world. But how are we going to change the world? Are we going to change the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ? No, we're going to preach a different type of gospel. And if those of you who read the Purpose-Driven Life, will find out they use 15 different translations of the Bible. Now, some of them are so far out, they are most hard to correlate at all with any of the other versions, but we are told the Bible is the Word of God. And then here are 15 different versions of this. Which is the Word of God? Well, people end up getting rather confused when you give them 15 different versions, some of which are so aberrant that they have very little relationship to the original text. So once they have accomplished this view of actually getting people a little confused about what the Word of God is, then they want to begin to change the individual, get them totally dedicated to working in the church. They spend more and more time working in the church. They're not really studying the gospel, but they're beginning to change themselves. And this is really the major thrust, is to get people to change themselves. Now, all you need to do is realize this has been going on for a number of years. What's happening to our society? Is our society getting better? No, it's not getting better. We're not seeing the fruit of this great evangelical movement, but we are seeing more and more people more complacent, just simply going along with whatever the government tells them to do. Where is the outcry from the Christian element about what's happening throughout the world, about the lying on the part of government officials? There's no outcry at all. If this were Bill Clinton lying, everybody would be jumping up and down. And when the current administration is lying about many things, why, everybody says, well, we just don't want to be critical. And we're beginning to see a change of the attitude towards people, towards righteousness, and being incapable of really, in many respects, determining right from wrong. And many people will justify the torture over there in the prisons in Iraq, saying, well, but look how bad the Islamic people are. But they've been torturing people for years, and look, they beheaded this fellow named Berg. Of course, I do not believe that was exactly what we saw. I mean, how many Islamic groups do you know, Islamic terrorist groups, who have army orange jumpsuits to put their prisoners in, and when they cut off their head, there's no blood? This obviously was not what we think we saw, but then so much of what we think we saw really isn't so. So, Sarah, is this having an impact on the people? What happens to the people in these churches? Do they eventually begin to understand that they're playing mind games with them?
Yeah, unfortunately so. We spend a lot of time talking to people who have fled these churches or have been kicked out or have been shown the door. And they do call this abandonment. They refer to this as, you know, if you've got people in your church who are not going along with the plan, then you want them to leave. You don't want them to stay. And the reason they believe that is because they have the New Age philosophy of critical mass. They believe that if they can get enough people on board with the new transformation and the new program, that they will reach a state of critical mass in which they can just have a paradigm shift and shift the church over into this new high gear, new style of organism. And they really do view it as an organism. And so they refer to us as laggards very frequently. And we are the people to be dismissed. We're the handful of radical kooks. We're the radical fringe, the fundamentalists. Fundamentalist is said in a very derogatory way now, of course, or anybody that says anything traditional. There was one church, we have just recently published a monograph about all of our latest research on Peter Drucker and his connection with Rick Warren. And in this monograph, we cite a story, a letter from a woman who tells us that a church in Oregon has a small group support group for cigar smokers and another one for beer drinkers. So that kind of tells you how far we've come. Not a good way at all.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take one more break here. When we get back, we're going to welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, this whole movement is beginning to interlock then with this faith-based initiative of the government, and the whole idea is now we'll have the church working closely with the government. And I think the idea of helping people is wonderful. I believe that's what the church should be doing. But under government auspices, with the government providing financial returns and telling the church what they're going to do and how they're going to function, with their money, of course. We'll be back here in just a moment with Sarah Leslie talking about what I feel is the greatest change we've seen in the church in 1,000 years. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon or this evening is Sarah Leslie. And Sarah has been really researching Peter Drucker. Well, now, of course, what other things have you found about Peter Drucker and his impact? You have a 50-page treatise on Peter Drucker?
Yes, we do. We've just recently published a monograph which is being distributed by Discernment Ministries. And let me give your listeners the phone number where they can order this. It's only $3.50. It's very inexpensive, and it's easy to read. It's 908-638-6504. That's 908-638-6504. And Discernment Ministries is located at P.O. Box 254 in High Bridge, that's two words, High Bridge, New Jersey, 08829. And discernment-ministries.com is on the Internet if people would like to go out on the Internet and read this paper out there as well. But this is...
What would the website be?
Oh, I'm sorry. www.discernment-ministries.com. And the purpose-driven paper is out there. We compiled a single-issue paper just purely on this idea of knowledge worker and knowledge capital, and what that means. We found evidence after evidence after evidence that this is already, this whole mentality is in the church, that that people need to be measured, they need to be assessed, they have to have demonstrable results, and they have to produce these outcomes, and they have to be effective in their ministry. And you know, if maybe it's just me being old-fashioned, but I was always taught that was work. That's stuff of the flesh. That's not stuff of the spirit as soon as you start acting that way.
All
right. That's the new church system.
All right, fine. Now, then, Chris, but how do they go about assessing people and their what they're doing? How do they have tests? Do they have forms that they're supposed to fill out? Is there some sort of record of the assessment?
Yeah, actually, they have very complex assessments out there, and they're all over the place on the Internet. People can go out to all of the various Saddleback websites, they can pull off a health assessment that is actually a health assessment that's being put out by Rick Warren and Saddleback, and they can pull off all sorts of assessments that have to do with transforming the private sector. There's assessments for your organization.
Now, hang on there for just a minute, Sarah, because okay. We want to bring our stations back on and then go to Fritz, who's coming. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Sarah's been talking about how they have these programs where they want to assess the people in the church and determine whether their attitudes and values and beliefs are changing, and they will be keeping records on the people because everything is based upon results. And we are going to transform the individual. We're going to transform the church. We are going to transform society. And you can go to Rick Warren's website, and he will talk about their plan to transform the world, a world peace initiative. Right now, we've got Fritz calling in from Maine. Hi, Fritz. How are you doing?
Hey, Dr. Monteith, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Have you called before?
Yes, sir, I have.
Okay.
Well, back about a year ago.
Okay. Well, tell us. It's been a good while. I knew it had been. So.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm sort of in a quandary now because I'm facing the same thing with the church. It's a Baptist church. I'm really puzzled about what's going on. And to me, it's very disturbing because as some of the Christian literature I've read, there's one Saint Cyprian who wrote about in the 400s A.D., and he said in the end times the spirit of Antichrist would be in every church. And this is what I'm seeing. What leads me to this is that in particular the rock music and the unqualified support for Israel, and I find it very, very disturbing at what I've read about, you know, biblical prophecy and Israel being the third temple and the its connection to the rise of the Antichrist. Now, is it true that these are mostly evangelical churches?
These are mostly evangelical Protestant churches. They're both Protestant and evangelical, because not all Protestants are evangelicals. But certainly all evangelicals are Protestants. I suggest that you get Sarah's treatise. We have a wonderful video. It's called Diapracts in the Church. We have a four-tape set. We have two of them, one Church Growth Movement, the other Apostate Church. And this goes into the background of what is really happening. But this is a conscious, organized, orchestrated effort to transform Christianity. And believe me, it's not to transform it to be better, but to water down the gospel. And your point about the rock music in the church, I think, is so accurate. In fact, Rick Warren and I have heard him say on tape, there is no such thing as Christian music. There are only Christian lyrics. Don't criticize our rock music, our loud rock music, because all music was made by God. Well, I don't believe that at all. I believe some of this music comes right out of the pit of hell, and we've got a wonderful new video going into the rock music. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, and that same music that you'll see at the rock concerts is now being played in our churches. And you have to ask yourself, why is that? Does this really honor God?
Oh, certainly not. And I think, are these materials available on your website?
Well, certainly, yes. The two things that I mentioned, and if you want to get the treatise, Sarah Leslie's treatise, why, you can go ahead and call her at 908-638-6504. Or if you order something from us and you ask for it, we'll print that up for you.
Okay, I plan to do it. It's a very critical issue with me right now.
Well, I think it is, and I think that you need to warn the people in the church what's happening, but if you do, they'll throw you out of the church. If you dare to speak out, why, you'll be asked to leave, and that doesn't seem very Christian to me.
No, well, that to me is such a frightening aspect to it, because you look at them, it should have the truth, because they're evangelicals, they have the Bible. But and another factor in it, Dr. Monteith, to a man, the people who believe in this, they're television watchers. That's where they get most of the information. And it's almost as if they've been programmed by television. And just, they don't have a really good concept of reality.
You're absolutely right. What are your thoughts about what Fritz is saying, Sarah?
Well, I think he's right. I think they're relying on people already having that brainwashed mentality. I don't know what else to call it. But, yeah, the easy believism, that spirit of not being discerning. And I also want to point out to Fritz that this is a very unique ecumenical phenomenon. This is across the board. You will find the purpose-driven church in every kind of church in America. You're going to find it in Episcopal churches. You're going to find it in Presbyterian churches. You're going to find it in mainline Methodist and congregational churches, and then you'll also find it in the Pentecostal and evangelicals. So it's not something that's unique to one branch of Christianity, and that's probably most disconcerting, is to see that this idea is so easily assimilated by anything.
Makes me wonder what the mission of America is in history. It seems to to reduce everything to the lowest common denominator.
So I'm looking at
the destruction of the divine image of man. It seems like that's America's mission to take that down.
Well, you see, the problem is, Fritz, there have been two missions for America. One was under the influence of the occult, which came here in 1640. The other is under the influence of the Christian influence.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, the Christian influence is waning because we do not have leadership. And so many of the people who should be discerning are actually pushing this church growth movement. This is what's so disturbing to me.
Yeah, well, Dr. Monteith, we do have a leader, sir, and you. And I would say right now, you're the greatest living American.
Well,
and I base that on my reading of history and
Well, look, I'm just a very fortunate American to have somebody built a radio station in my home. That doesn't usually happen to most people. So I just do my best, but God bless you.
Okay, well, yeah, well, thanks for everything you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Leslie.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Fritz calling from Maine. If you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY-464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Sarah, who's done a phenomenal job of going into the background of this incredible movement, and certainly the founder of this movement, a man named Peter Drucker. Now, does Rick Warren acknowledge that Peter Drucker is his mentor?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, I challenge people, if you doubt what I'm saying, just simply type in Peter Drucker and Rick Warren on the Google search engine, and you'll see what comes up. Because there's actually quotations posted on the web from respected journals where Rick Warren is talking about how Peter Drucker mentored him, how Peter Drucker spent time in his home, and you'll see that there's a strong interconnections between these men. And Peter Drucker often refers to his work consulting with these mega churches.
Well, I think that it's so vitally important that people understand that this is a management approach. This is the same management approach that they have in industry, same management approach they have in government, same management approach they've introduced into education, but into the church. I mean, the church is a place where to go to worship God, not to be manipulated by a management system that comes from a man who was involved with an esoteric group in Austria. And this already comes out of the Hegelian concepts that you can create and alter mankind, which is not an individual creation made in the image and likeness of God, but is simply another organism, and you can alter that by this process of conflict, or the dialectics, or the thesis, the antithesis, and the new synthesis. And this is what we're trying to do, is change the people. And they do this in the small groups by getting together, by bonding with the people there. Would you like to sort of discuss the mechanism of mechanics of how this works, Sarah?
Well, yeah. Actually, one of the ways they do it is first they isolate the pastor. They, you know, a lot of people have probably told you, you know, my pastor went away for a training session and he came back all fired up and he wanted to bring in this new model. Well, that's one of the things they do, is they take the pastors and they put them through the training techniques that we probably saw evident in the late 80s and early 90s with the teachers who were to become change agents. And, of course, part of the training here is they have to turn pastors into facilitators. Instead of being the men who deliver the Word of God, the literal Word of God, and dealing with cognitive thinking and that type of thing, they change the pastors into these affective people who basically become merchants. They begin to market the church and market the gospel and figure out how can our church attract people in the community? You start looking at yourself in your church as though you were a business enterprise, like you were going to sell tacos or something. And, of course, the pastors have been trained for the last several decades through the Saddleback Church. And we mentioned in our monograph, it's so bad that pastors who don't really want to think for themselves anymore can go out to www.pastors.com. And that's one of Saddleback's websites where they can pull off pre-canned sermons. So if you're too lazy to write your own sermon, you can pick up one of the sermons that's already out there and deliver the 40-day messages that have already been prepared for you. And then there's a number of ministries now that have piggybacked off of the 40 Days of Purpose, and they've got plans for your next year. What are you going to do after that? And, of course, the idea is to bring all of the change agents in your church on board and to get them thinking this new way. And then once you do that, the goal is to reach this critical mass where you get enough people in the church who want to worship in the new style, like you described, with the rock music and t-shirts and sandals and rock and roll and all of that. And once you've got enough people, they can vote out the other people. I've heard of some churches where literally half of the church was voted out. So this is a takeover, and it's taught that way. It's taught that way to pastors. It's very aggressive, and it has very little in common with the simplicity of the gospel and the humbleness of Jesus Christ.
Well, this is really rather a frightening thing as we see this sweeping across America. And you can go to their websites, everything they talk about it there. They're not trying to hide the fact they're trying to change the world, but they're not changing it using the gospel of Jesus Christ. They're changing the world with a management technique devised by a man who is involved with the esoteric and the dialectic process. And this is really what is frightening, is that so many good ministers have gone into this, and they sort of they go to the meetings, and it's almost like this enthusiasm you see at an Amway meeting, and everybody gets enthused. We are going, of course, to, church is going to grow. We're going to be successful. We're going to transform our communities, and then, of course, society as a whole. Well, I can remember when we had a minister come to our community, and that was his thing. We're going to transform this community. We're going to transform this community. They got into this church growth movement. The minister took off his coat. Then pretty soon he took off his tie. Very soon everything is very casual. Instead of honoring the God who created the heavens and the earth and holding him in awe, he's somebody begins to change. God, at least they would have us believe, is beginning to change, and he simply is somebody who's sort of our buddy, our friend. This is not the God, of course, of the Bible. I mean, this certainly he looks after his children, and he loves his children, but he's also God of wrath and punishment. This is never mentioned. In fact, the idea that we're sinners saved by grace, that we need, we're sinners, and that's why we need a Savior, that really isn't brought out. In fact, this whole idea of sin, and certainly the idea of hell, the idea of eternal punishment, the idea of original sin, none of these things are brought out. We begin to change the message of the church, or we have a little Bible verse here and there. Then we tell people how to get along with their wives, how to get along with their children, how to be a success. Be sure, of course, remember, we don't have to worry about the Old Testament, because now, of course, we're under the New Testament, but remember Malachi, which says you ought to give 10% of your income to the church. So why do we go back to the book of Malachi and Malachi's promise to get people to tithe, and yet we tell them, of course, the God of the Old Testament, who is a God of wrath and punishment, when people turned against him, is no longer applicable in modern-day society. So we've got real problems, almost like schizophrenia, but it's all laid out, it's all organized. They know exactly how to get the people to follow.
That's right. They are counting on human nature, and we already know from Scripture that basic human nature is that we are sheep, and we will go astray if we don't have a good shepherd. And they are counting on John Dewey's idea of peer-driven, that everything in this whole system is based on the idea that you're going to look at your fellow Christians and try to follow them. And it's not directing your focus towards God. It's definitely a peer-driven church program. And so I sometimes interchange the word peer-driven and purpose-driven, because that's the intention. They're, like I said, they use very sophisticated marketing techniques that were devised during the latter part of the 20th century, in which they learned how to manipulate people. Sometimes it was even called propaganda, but advertising, how to subtly induce people to be tantalized by something, to go for something. Well, that's how this whole program is being sold to people, is that you need this. And it's very sophisticated, and of course those who don't go along are the outcasts.
Well, let's go to Carol, who's calling in from Arkansas. Hi, Carol. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Thank you so much, and Sarah, for doing this work and for bringing this out. You know, I had been seeing this 40 Days of Purpose on several different church marquees, and it never clicked into me what this was all about, that this was that move, that purpose-driven movement. However, I was in a church in Little Rock, where a pastor came in under one pretense, that he was old-fashioned and same values, which that is really the most conservative Baptist church in Little Rock. It's the old First Baptist Church, actually. As opposed to, for instance, Emmanuel, which is where Bill Clinton belonged. But anyway, and there's some good people in that church, too. I'm not saying there aren't. But this pastor came in, was hired under, we thought, the right pretenses, and thought he was led there of the Lord. And he started in about a year going off with this, and then we went to two services, and the regular 11 o'clock service was for the youth, the young people, and they had, as you say, the rock music and the, you know, singing with the microphone like an actor or actress, singer, you know, pop star, and casual dress, and all this, and it just really wound up tearing the church so badly that one Sunday he decided he'd take a vote on it. And the people voted against him, and he walked out. He took about a third of the church with him, but it did split that church very tragically. But I'm seeing this, you know, and I'm glad to know. What is the book? I heard the 908...
Well, this is a treatise that Sarah has written. It's a 50-page treatise, and
it's
the number
called
is
The Pied Pipers of Purpose.
It's 908-638-6504. That's 908-638-6504. Actually, Barrett Cho has some excellent material up on her website at crossroad.to. We have a 4-tape set, The Church Growth Movement. We have a video entitled Diaphracts in the Church. Goes really, it's an excellent video in my estimation. We have another 4-tape set called The Apostate Church. At least we have a voice, and we're trying to warn people. I think that the majority of people, traditional Christians, are going to get into this church and have their faith destroyed.
Yeah, and I think we have to remember a couple of those passages that the Lord said that unless he builds the house, you know, it will be a failure on the sand, and if he builds it, it'll be on him, the rock, and it will stand. He also said that in the last days that there would come confusion, and that there'd be many that would fall away, and that the way was narrow, and few there would be that find it. So I think the few, we're going to see the dwindling in the true believing church, and then you'll see the masses going to the other, and I think that is the way. Actually, the scriptures kind of describe it, sadly.
But if you really want a lot of information, that's a video we do not carry, but it's called Does Truth Matter by John MacArthur. It's 5 hours long, but it's well done. It's the number is 877-CROSS-TV. That's 877-CROSS-TV. I think our materials is excellent. I think that Dr. MacArthur's certainly has a lot of prestige, a man I really respect. And I think his message, they've tried this before, it doesn't work, it's not going to work now. It destroyed the church in England, it's going to destroy the church in America. And then he, of course, used exactly what you say. There's a wide way, wide path, and it leads to destruction. There's a narrow path, and it leads to salvation.
Thank you both very much, and God bless you, Dr. Stan.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Carol. How, are you listening on shortwave or internet?
Yes, sir, on shortwave.
Okay, wonderful.
5-7.
Okay, bye-bye.
495, thanks.
Okay, fine. Well, we're just trying to make sure that the shortwave audience is out there, and that's good to know that people are listening across America on shortwave, and so please tell others about our programs. Tell them about our shortwave internet. 5 hours of internet, 4 hours of shortwave every day. Sarah Leslie, thank you so much for being with us. Why don't you get out your address one more time and your website?
Okay, the address is Discernment Ministries.
Is that ministry or ministries?
It's ministries.
Oh.
Discernment Ministries.
All right.
P.O. Box 254. And that's in High Bridge, New Jersey. That's two words, High Bridge, New Jersey. 08829. 08829. And the website for anyone who would like to go out online and pick this off, Pied Pipers of Purpose Driven, is www.discernment-ministries.com.
God bless you, Sarah. Thank
God
you.
God bless you.
Thank you so very much for being with us. And we'll just keep hammering away at it. When you got something new, let me know, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and some of you may get tired of hearing us talk about this, but this is the great threat to our Christian churches, and you destroy the Christian foundation of this country. You destroy this country, and I think that the average person who's involved in this loves the Lord. He does not understand that this is not to increase our faith, but to destroy our faith. And I believe this is truly diabolical, and I believe that it's going to have a profound impact upon the people who get sucked into this, who get so busy in the church, who begin to change their perspective, their relationship with the rest of their family, and everything is the group. The group, and this is one wife said to me, there was a growing barrier between myself and my husband because he was spending all of his time working at the church. But what finally got him, was when they brought the Swedish meatballs into the sanctuary and continued with his sermon. And he suddenly realized that this was not the way it should be. We have a sermon, and we express our love and admiration and worship of God. And then we have the Swedish meatballs afterwards if you want to, but you don't try to mix the two of them together in the name of the casual approach to Christianity. Well, we hope many of you out there in the listening audience will want to seriously consider getting the Church Growth Movement 4-tape set, the Apostate Church 4-tape set, and certainly the video diapracs in the church. And if you don't have access to getting the material from Sarah Leslie and you specifically request that, why, we'll be glad to copy that off and get it for you. I think it's important. I think it's important you have this information and you help us to disseminate it across America. If you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, please do. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get the book, the video, or the book, the video, and the audio tape together, known as the Brotherhood of Darkness Special. We do have a website. It's radioliberty.com. And you can actually hear our internet programs there 3 hours a day. There's a link to the American Freedom Network. Of course, it tells you the address of the Genesis Network. So you can actually listen 5 hours a day if you want to, and on the internet. We won't get much accomplished, but you can listen. And then we go to our site where we have our newsletters. And I recommend the newsletters because there's a tremendous amount of information there. And not only that, why there's a documentation, so you'll know that what we're saying is actually true. You might even want to look at some of the items that we carry that help to keep us on the air. If you'd be interested in joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Again, the number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War, W-A-R. So some people can remember it better that way than they can the actual numbers. And then, of course, we want you, your job is to tell other people about our programs. Remember, they can listen to us on shortwave 4 hours a day at 5.745 megahertz. That's 5.745 megahertz. It's right up there on the internet. Or you can always give our telephone number, 800 number, call, and they'll get the shortwave frequency for you. Encourage your friends to listen on shortwave. Encourage them to listen on the internet. Encourage them to join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. So until tomorrow, I guess it'll be Monday now, when we'll be back with you. We'll be back with you on Monday. Incidentally, there is a conspiracy conference. It's going to be held in Santa Clara, and I'll be there for the next 2 days. And if you need more information, their number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. The conspiracy conference, it's going to be in Santa Clara, just north of where we are here. And I will have a booth. I won't be talking, but it should be an interesting time. So, until Monday, for the rest of our listeners, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is was usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Jonathan West, and he heads a group called Getting America Back. Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's wonderful to talk with you, Stan, and all of your listeners as well.
Why don't you tell us just a little bit about your approach to what's going on today?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm like a lot of people who have seen over the years a lot of problems develop in our country and, for that matter, around the world. And we've seen a lot of bad moves made, a lot of bad decisions made. We've seen the shameful horrors of our legal system and our economic instabilities, the lack of real control of our borders, and disappointments with all sides of our political leadership, and the degradation of our planetary environment, and the endless sex and violence in the entertainment media, the end of property rights in much of America, elder abuse and Social Security of all places, and great damage by sins of omission with a lot of the news media, which talk radio has tried so gallantly to make up for, and life-threatening violence that erupts in some of our schools, breakdown in law and order in many areas of our justice system, and the dumbing down in our educational system and on television, media blackouts and unconstitutional judicial legislation. And that's an interesting thing, judicial legislation. I thought the legislature was supposed to do that. And there's the rapidly expanding dictatorial bureaucracy and the legalization of dangerous drugs in America, starting with marijuana. And there's the corporate corruption that we have seen recently. And you could go on and on and on. And at first, when these things began to develop, people said, oh, well, it's not that bad. I mean, you know, it's just... And now it has gotten so bad that everybody seems to be aware that it's bad. But now they're saying, well, we can't do anything about it. It's too bad. It's beyond us. Well, I'm one of these people who said, no, it is not beyond us. We can make a difference. But we have to, first of all, be determined to do so. So I started working hard in my own areas, and it was including such things as writing a book and such things as setting up websites and talking to people around the country on talk radio, as I'm doing right now, and just doing everything I can to ride the freedom trail to warn them. In this case, it isn't the British are coming. It's not like in the early colonial days. It's instead another enemy, and the enemy is within. It's some of our own people who mean well and who end up doing great harm to us. They mean well, but they're doing all the wrong things. And we've got to do something to get us back on track to constitutional law, to have law and order in so many different areas. We've got an awful lot to take care of. So we started a website. Of course, there's the book, Goodbye America? And then there is this new website. And if you can get on, you folks out there can get on the Internet, you'll really want to see this thing. That means even if you have to go to a library or to get some friend who's on the Internet to show it to you, because it's worth the effort.
Now, well, tell us what they're going to find on the website, and who is this enemy that's making all these mistakes?
Well, it's actually human stupidity and people who mean well but don't seem to understand what they're doing. Then there are those who do have hidden agendas. There's always people like that. And unfortunately, some of those hidden agendas have nothing to do with the American system of government. And you'll have quite a combination of different groups and people who, for one reason or another, end up doing more harm than good. So sometimes, as I say, the well-meaning and others who have hidden agendas, almost everything imaginable out there, and we are just seemingly overwhelmed by it. And my answer is we don't have to be overwhelmed by it. It's only because most people won't do anything. And so we've started, among other things, this website. The website is called GettingAmericaBack.org. That's Getting America Back as one word, and a period, and then O-R-G. And that will get you there, and you're going to get one big surprise on that website. Because we not only discuss some of these problems so that there's no doubt in anyone's mind that these are some of the things we do have to deal with, but we also talk about ways and means towards solutions. Because we can solve these problems.
All right, well, how are we going to solve the problems? I mean, the thing is that one of the big problems is, you know, is this intense apathy that we have. Somebody once said we have two problems. One's ignorance and the other's apathy. And the wag said, well, I don't know and I don't care. What we have to do is, how do we motivate people to realize that they stand to lose everything, that there is no security what most people think they have security in, that is their savings or their pension funds or their property, because all of this certainly could be lost so readily if America as a nation were to fall.
Well, one of the big problems you just pointed out, and I thought that was quite good, I've got that in one of my website pages, the page called Make It Happen. We go through that question and answer thing where we say, the question is, which is America's greatest problem, ignorance or apathy? And the answer is, I don't know and I don't care. it's almost humorous in a sad sort of way. There's also another point I made on that page that I think is interesting to most of the viewers, I mean listeners. I was talking on television recently, so got to remember, this is radio. You can look as closely as you want to at your radio, but you're not going to see me. So this is okay. It's radio, and we're going to do a good job here reaching the American people as we do on television and in other radio stations all over the country. And Women's News, the publication, the monthly publication, had an article quite some time ago. Amy Onorno wrote this, and she said the following: by default, we have banded together in silence to create a negative movement. We have all made a difference. Of course, what that means is all of us. That means all of you folks that are listening in who haven't done anything, and that means me if I don't do anything. It means all of us if we don't do anything about these things. That is going to help bring us down. It is really going to be our undoing. In other words, by not doing anything, we are making a difference, all right? A lot of people say we can't make a difference. Oh, boy, are we ever making a difference.
All right, fine. Well, how are we making a difference? I mean, we have an election coming up here in just a very few months. And yet, if you look at the candidates, each one insists that he's the best man, and yet both of them belong to Skull and Bones. Certainly, John Kerry is affiliated, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. We have George Bush, who surrounded himself with people from the CFR, 10 of his 11 initial advisors, but when he was running for the president, came from this same organization. It looks like both candidates are going the same direction. Who will we vote for?
Well, you know, we're going to have to start at the beginning, and it's about the only way that we can do anything. I tell people on the site and in my book that if you belong to any political party, get into the party, make changes, bring your friends in with you, get others interested, and go in there and start working your way into the inner sanctum of the party with your friends and really make a difference and really raise a ruckus.
Well,
you can
I will tell you, I spent 14 years on the Central Committee of the Republican Party here in the state of California. And the Republican Party was purchased by fellows for $2 million, and they were able to send out advertisements, get their people into the Central Committees all across the state of California. And the gullible people, unfortunately, got these advertisements where they, I don't know if you know, do you know California at all?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
All right. Well, of course, there was a man named Howard Jarvis, and Jarvis and Paul Gamm got through Proposition 13.
Now,
of course, Howard Jarvis has been dead for many years, but they had pictures of Howard Jarvis on the glossy flyers they sent out saying, vote for these conservatives, who were actually the liberals, who were actually being run by these people of great wealth, among them Brooks Firestone, right here in California. And they simply purchased control of the Republican Party. And once they purchased control of the Republican Party, it really didn't matter what the people who wanted to do something said. It was bought and purchased. And if you had a few million dollars, you can simply buy the substance of any political party in the state of in the United States today. The great tragedy is we have people with a different agenda, and they've got unlimited money, it seems.
Yeah, and you know, in Europe, they're always joking about our American politicians. They should talk the way they've got things going there, but they end up joking about it. They say Americans have the best politicians money can buy.
And that's absolutely true. And that's why, you know, actually what's so interesting is that there is a couple of senators who are talking about repealing the 17th Amendment. And I don't, have you looked into that subject at all?
I don't think that is probably going to get anywhere. They're having a lot of trouble with that sort of thing, and I don't think they're going to get anywhere with that one. But many other things.
But it's a great idea, because what the American people don't understand is what the 17th Amendment really was about. I'm sure you know what the 17th Amendment was.
Let me see. I'm trying to remember that particular one. You'll have to refresh me.
All right, fine. Well,
numbers.
The 16th Amendment was the progressive income tax. All of these things came in under the auspices of Colonel Edward Mandel House, who is one of my favorite villains, who is a man with supernatural power, who was able to control both President Wilson and President Roosevelt. But the 17th Amendment was the idea of the direct election of senators. Now, our founding fathers, in their wisdom, said, we want a house of one of the two houses, the legislature, that made of statesmen, not people who can be bought and sold by those who have the most money. So the senators will be elected by the states, and they will represent the states and the legislatures of the states, so that the federal government will not be able to impinge upon the power of the states. Because we want to keep a decentralized central government and have matters dealing with life and liberty and property dealt with the state and the local level. Well, the people who wanted to establish a fascist society said, no, we want, of course, a direct election of the senators, because we know then that we'll be able to buy and sell the senators. Of course, they didn't tell the common folks that, but that's how they got the 17th Amendment through back during the Woodrow Wilson administration. And that was one of the greatest blows to our concept of a Republican or federal system. Now, of course, you had, as you say, the finest senators money could buy. Before that, you couldn't buy a senator. You'd have to bribe everybody in the state to get what you wanted, everybody in the state government. Now all you have to do is just bribe the senator. So it costs millions of dollars to get reelected. And some of the senators begin to realize that you may well be right, until there are enough people who really care, we're not going to change anything. But this is so important that people understand how the wicked people, starting back in the early years of the 20th century, set out to change us from a republic into a democracy.
But you know, one of the things I think that's going to be important, if enough people, and it will only take a few thousand out of the millions in this country, it will only take a few thousand across the country to actually make a real big difference, because most people won't do anything, and there's a handful of very evil people and a handful of people with all kinds of political baggage of their own special type that will come in and take over and be glad to do so, and they they have the money that makes things happen. But you know, that won't work if enough people decide, if a grassroots effort develops and enough people decide to make a difference. That means getting into the political parties. That means influencing the media. That means influencing the educational system. It means making changes in a lot of areas. And a lot of folks just don't seem to think that we can do that. They think it's too much to do. But it isn't. A few thousand people in this country can make the difference, and they just don't realize it. I don't know if you realize what we're up against at the beginning of this effort, but we have become the uninvolved. And, you know, when my book came out, talk show listeners all over the nation called in on many of the programs that I was on. They all were very quick to tell me how wonderful it is that there are at least a few who are willing to actually get involved. Then almost all of them recited a virtual litany of reasons why they personally couldn't become involved. They couldn't possibly get involved. Then, when I recently created my GettingAmericaBack.org website, emails began pouring in by the hundreds telling me how great it is that there's a website that shows folks how to really begin to make a positive difference. And then, after answering with encouragement to these people, I've asked them in return emails for their own involvement, and almost all of them either answered that they personally just weren't going to be able to get involved, or they just never bothered to answer my return email. And, you know, I've done my best to find out from those I did get back to, both on the air and with emails, and ask them the reasons why they personally could not get involved. And there were a few that were getting involved, but they were doing a few little feel-good things that didn't actually make much of a difference, and they wanted that to be enough because they didn't want to really, really have to make an effort. But there were three main reasons. There were other reasons, but the three main ones, the number one reason was they just didn't know what to do. The second reason was they don't have enough time. The third reason was nobody's interested. Now, with the first reason, just don't know what to do, the website, the book, lots of all sorts of additional references show what and how. They really do. It shows you in lots of ways how to get started, and on every single page on my website, I put an email address where you can get back to me and where I'll help you along if you get lost or you're not quite sure what to do next to get involved, to make a difference. There are a lot of things. There's actually a workable formula that does work. Now, the second one, don't have the time? Well, the time one has available for anything is a matter of the priorities that you and I set for all of the things we must do and for all of the things we want to do. If America's future and the future of our children, your children and my children, and your children's children are important enough for you, you can set your priorities accordingly and make the time. Now, the third reason, nobody's interested. My experience has been that lots of folks all over the nation are interested. The problem is, we must convince them that it all comes down to the inescapable fact that we are our own best solution to most of our problems. And we must come to understand that if we don't get involved, it truly is going to be goodbye America. It comes down to that. It's up to you and me. That's what I have to say to the listeners. It really means don't be just happy with somebody trying to do something. You and I are the people who must do something. And if we don't, it is goodbye, America.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Jonathan. The question is, how can people get involved in the Republican Party or whatever the party, let's the Democrat Party or whatever the party would be. And when we get back here in just a moment, I want to address those issues and how can they be effective within the political structure when there seems to be, even at the grassroots level, tremendous amounts of money that's put out to buy and sell even the structure of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. I'm sure if it was threatened, they'd do the same thing. We'll be back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jonathan West, and of course his website is www.gettingamericaback.org. That's gettingamericaback.org. And what, let's imagine people do get involved in the Republican Party. They go to the meetings of the Central Committee, because that's the structure of the Republican Party, at least at the county level, or they join one of the myriad of Republican organizations, most of whom are led by people who have perhaps a far different agenda. They've been working for many years to get into that position so they can simply eliminate the traditional Republican beliefs. And I'm sure the same thing happens within the Democrat Party. So how can the individuals, they get involved in the political process, how can they begin to have an impact?
Well, first of all, whether it's going into a political party or taking action on a community level in some other area, either way, whatever your goal is going to be, there are some steps that you can take, because you don't want to go in alone. All by yourself, it isn't going to work. If you go in with your own group, you develop a group and you go in there with a power group of your own, it's amazing what you can do. And there, on the Make It Happen page of the website, gettingamericaback.org, you will find a series of steps that you can take. And the first steps are to determine the goal. And in this case, your example was to have a goal to get into one or the other party and to try to make a difference by changing the philosophy and the approach and get back on track with the American concept. Well, you first want to know what other problems you'll have to tackle, what are the committees, how are they set up, where do you go. But the first thing you're going to do before you get in there is to begin to get people together in your own community. You want to decide how you're going to form up and how you're going to attack the problem of your choice, as we just mentioned. Are you planning as a group, or do you want to join an existing group? There are some existing organizations, we've got some listed on the website, that you can get into that may be covering some of these issues. And if you want to, you can join one of those regional or national organizations, or you can form up your own. I like the idea of forming up your own. And that means getting together with friends and neighbors, putting together a flyer, and putting down the sorts of things that you have that you're going to be tackling, what you want to do and why you want to do it. You can use a lot of the information we have available on the website and in the associated book and in other materials that are available. You can get this information in a lot of different ways. And then, hey, how about talk show radio programs in your area? Now there's a source to reach the people. Also, try to get acquainted with editors and reporters on the local paper. I know they're often very suspicious and sometimes not too friendly, but, you know, you really do want to try to make friends in the media if you can, wherever you can. And there are areas where you can do this. I've done it with weekly papers and specialty papers and publications around the country. The big daily metropolitan newspapers usually are not going to be cooperative because you're not under their thumb. But there are other papers, and you can reach out to them. Then the next thing, once you've determined, you've got someone...
Hold that thought right there. We're going to have to bring our other stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jonathan West, and he has a website. It's called gettingamericaback.org, and he is, of course, giving his suggestions as to what people can do to get involved in the political process with the hope of being able to do something to begin to change the disastrous course our nation has taken. So with that as a thought, he's giving some suggestions as to what you can do and some of the organizations you can join. So pick it up from there, Jonathan.
Yes. Assuming now that you have a list of organizations, that you've got some of your friends together, and you have developed your goals and all that, one of the things that you can do is to put together a statement of purpose and conduct that your organization is going to have. Now, this is an important thing. It's a paper that would clearly describe what your going to do what you're about, what you feel is really important, and how everyone must behave intelligently and with maturity of behavior and with a spirit of cooperation. In other words, it's a team effort, and you must always have your lines of communication open, and you must be very honorable and very honest with everybody. You must put together a group that's not going to fall apart around you. You want it to be strong, and you want to be able to work together, and you want to believe in each other. And in the process, you must watch out for those few opportunists who may try to sneak into your group with unwanted personal baggage and ulterior motives that are not at all appropriate to the cause. Always watch out for that, because there will always be attempts of that nature. You have to be really smart when you put together your power group. Then you get into action after that. After you've gone through a lot of that, you get into action and you have your people study the website, the book, the other materials that are available, discuss everything thoroughly, know what you're going to do before you start, and then you start making your contacts, and you start using the media and using your flyers, and yes, get in touch with me, get in touch with everybody you can that might be able to give you some help. No matter what the issue is, there are things you can do. If you're going to get involved with, say, the problems of Social Security, that's one example we gave on that website page. We show you how you get in touch with senior citizen centers and how you get their support and how you go on to reach representatives in Washington. And there's certain pages on our website where you can reach committees, various committees, and so on. If you want to clean up our politics, you'll want to find good politicians to work with. That's a rare find. Or you can go after very capable folks and try to persuade them to run for office too. Of course, you can have the opportunity come to your own doorstep if you want to be one of those who does run. And frankly, there's so many different things you can do. The parties need to be changed, and they need to be changed from the inside. There is a politician's pledge that we like to refer to. That's one of the pledges that we have in our website. And the politician's pledge is, I'm going to see if I can find my printout copy of it here. It may be fairly close by. Let's see. Here it is. This is an important pledge that you can develop, and with your group, present it publicly to the politicians and ask them to sign it. Now, the interesting thing is, it's hard for them to wheedle out of it if you catch them at an open meeting or something like that, and you have quite a few people with you, and you bring the pledge up to them. The pledge is an 8-part pledge. It doesn't have to be exactly this way. You can add more parts to it. But here's what we have so far. Number one, here's what the politician is asked to pledge. I will stand firm for a return to constitutional law. I will work hard to halt the practice of legislation by judges. Two, before any government financial allocations are to be made, I will always consider where the money is coming from, where it's really coming from the people, and to make this issue known publicly. Three, whenever I propose a new law, I will always make every effort to include a proposal to eliminate at least one existing law which is obsolete, ineffective, unnecessary, or otherwise inappropriate. And number four, I will always consider whether it's the people or special interests who want the new laws that are being considered. If it is not in the people's best interest, I will always vote against such laws. And five, I will promise to do all that I can to reduce and to eliminate as much of the oversized government bureaucracy as possible and return our nation to fiscal responsibility.
Hold that thought just right there for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jonathan West, and he's been reading us the various things, the pledge that they want politicians to sign. And so far, I haven't seen anything at all I would disagree with. Why don't you complete the rest of the list there, Jonathan?
Yes, there are just three more points to the list. One of them is, number six, at every opportunity, I will work hard to create and implement major reform in the American legal system. Seven, I will always consider my constituents first, last, and always. I will not forget that I am an elected employee of the voters. Number eight, I pledge myself to a high moral and ethical standard, which, if breached, will result in my promise and implementation of resignation from office.
Well, I certainly feel that all of those points are well made. Let's just take one of the things that you mentioned earlier. What can be done about Social Security? Because we have a problem that, you know, when they first passed the Social Security bill, they had about one person retired for 300 working. Now it's about 3.1 people working for every individual who's retired. Very soon it will be two people working for every individual. And they're talking that they have about a $23 trillion unfunded a promise to the American people that they will provide for them, and no possible way that they're ever going to be able to keep their promise. And they know that Social Security is a scam because they've been stealing the money in it from it ever since the time of the Johnson administration. What can be possibly done about Social Security, which is a system that is doomed to failure without dramatic change?
You know, that's as you were going through that, I was thinking to myself that one of the answers to this problem was to first admit very clearly that one of the biggest problems has been that rather than to have invested that money that we put into Social Security, rather than to invest that money in stocks and bonds and other types of financial instruments, they just used it as a borrowing tool for the government to take the money and use it any way they wanted to, and just put IOUs in there. They stole the money out of there, and there is no excuse for that at all. It is totally irresponsible, and the answer, of course, is going to be that we're going to have to all bite the bullet when it comes to that, because the politicians have done us a great deal of harm, and the money is there.
Hold that thought right there. We're going to have to just bring our stations back on board right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jonathan West. His website is Getting America Back. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, the Social Security was a wonderful scam because it gave the politicians the opportunity to spend a lot more money than they had to tax for because they were able to spend this money, put in an IOU, and then spend it, and figure that they weren't going to be around when that IOU had to be paid off. And this is why we have a $23 trillion unfunded mandate, because all this money is gone. There is no money in the Social Security Fund. And, you know, even Alan Greenspan has been talking recently about the fact that we have real problems with Social Security. Now, none of the politicians want to address this. Alan Greenspan talked about where we are headed. Immediately, the current administration, the President Bush, said this is not a problem, and the Democrats said this is not a problem, and they both are just not telling the truth. They know what is going to happen. They know this whole thing is going to implode, and that the people are paying the money and now have about as much chance of getting their Social Security benefits if they are 20 or 30 as they do of winning the that $200 million lotto. that just don't have that chance at all, because there's no way this is going to be worked out without dramatic changes, without increasing the age at which people can retire. I've always said if we just move the age of retirement up to 80, the system would go on and do very well, where they're going to have to increase the taxation, and nobody wants to do that. They're going to have to do away with the cost of living increases. They're going to have to just go back on their solemn promise. But then, isn't that what politicians always do? What are your thoughts on that, Jonathan?
Well, it's really something with the politicians promising that they're going to do all these things, they're going to solve it. There's no problem, no problem, no problem. Well, the problem is the politicians, and that's where we have to start. And I'm afraid most of the people aren't willing to do anything about it, but we can. And some of these problems are going to be solved the hard way, only because they've finally gotten to the point where nothing we do is going to be easy. We could have solved it before, but nobody would. People like me and you, we were hollering about these things, and nobody paid any attention. You know, there's another area of problems with Social Security that most people don't even know about. The media hasn't even bothered to tell you about. Do you realize how many areas where the Social Security is cutting off old people, making mistakes in the things that they're doing and leaving people destitute? Did you know that that's happening over and over and over again because the system can't even work right now? I mean to tell you, it's harming people now. It's really hurting people. People that have put in their money, have saved over the years, and yet they are absolutely being destroyed because the system isn't working right. And sometimes the Social Security people do things that they probably know good and well are doing a great deal of harm, but they think that's what they're supposed to do. You know, it's like in Nazi Germany. The bureaucracy in Washington is like that. And you know why? Because if you ever brought them up to trial, well, you know what they'd say? I was only following orders. That's right.
You know, one of the most
interesting... They're not responsible for anything they do.
One of the most interesting things is that they recently passed this drug bill that's supposed to cost $400 billion over the next 10 years, and the man who came up with the actuary figures was ordered by the Bush administration not to tell Congress the truth. In other words, the congressmen and the senators depend upon what they're told, you know, of what it's going to cost, and they were assured, well, it's only going to cost, you know, $400 billion. Well, the real figures were about $5.36 billion. Those are the figures they have right now. Probably that's only a small fraction of what it's going to cost. But the actuaries who worked this thing out were ordered not to tell the truth. Now, when the Bush administration orders people not to tell the truth, what does that say about the moral stability of the Republicans? We would expect the Democrats to lie. They always have, but we've always liked to think the Republicans were different, and yet once they get into power, they seem to be just as corrupt as the Democrats. We've got a real problem, a moral problem in our society, where the truth really doesn't matter, and I would say the truth does matter. What are your thoughts on that,
John? Well, you know, you have to go back a little bit and see what we've got. See what the animal's made of. Actually, when you get to these politicians, what have we got? In the state legislatures, all the way up to the federal legislatures, to the administrations of both parties, no matter where you go, the most represented occupation is lawyers. Now, what does that tell you? Or are there a few people out there who don't really know what's happened with our legal system and what lawyers have become?
Well, you know, when America was founded, the vast majority of the people at the Constitutional Convention, the vast majority of people who signed the Declaration of Independence were lawyers, but these were lawyers who looked to a higher moral standard, who felt that it was wrong to lie, who had deeply felt religious beliefs, were willing to risk their lives for those beliefs. How many lawyers today would risk their lives for much of anything other than for a fast buck?
Yeah,
so we've lost our religious foundation.
Yeah, it's changed a great deal. Also, the original founders who signed the Declaration of Independence, every single one of them was a property owner without exception. And one of the most important areas they were trying to protect when they developed first the Articles of Confederation and then later the Constitution, was property. It was one of the great freedoms that we wanted, was property. And they understood that we had to allow for eminent domain for property, for schools and roads and things like that that were for public use when everyone is properly compensated, but not in other areas. Private property was to be private unless it absolutely had to be used for public use. But that is an idea that was so strong in those days that it even is listed in four separate sections of our Constitution. Not one, four different areas of our Constitution. That's how important it was. Now today, if you have a piece of property that some developer wants to get away from you, and you want to hold on to it as an investment for the future, and you want to keep it, and it's a nice piece of property, and you've kept it up, there's nothing wrong with the property, but that developer knows how to go to the local government and get a redevelopment project going. That property, through eminent domain, can be taken away from you, and believe me, it doesn't matter if you're given any money for it, because if you don't want to sell it, that's taking it away from you. And they take it away from you and then turn it over to this other developer so that he gets it to develop it into some grand scheme that makes him and a lot of other people very wealthy off of your sweat, off of what you have lost. What happened to the rights of property now? Well, that's the way it's gone. We've lost most of our freedoms. I don't like to say this, but this is no longer the United States of America. I don't know where it is. I don't know what it is. It uses the words United States of America. It uses the flag. It has all sorts of trimmings that we use to make it seem like it's the United States of America. But it is not the United States of America. And this weekend we celebrate a Memorial Day, don't we, for all the people who have lost their lives fighting to keep us from becoming what we are now allowing ourselves to become.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And of course, Jonathan is expressing the sentiments, I think, of many of our listeners who see what's happening. And of course, unless they understand the components that we talk about in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, none of this really makes sense. How could we possibly have turned our back on concepts of individual freedom? These concepts of the rights of private property, which go back to the writings of John Locke, had been hard fought for under the British system, were codified into law, or at least into philosophy by John Locke, and then codified into law in the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. Because of all the things, certainly private property rights were the essence of freedom. Then John Locke wrote about life and liberty and property, and if you don't have property rights, you just don't have any individual freedom at all. So let's go to Ed, who's calling in from Idaho. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Great, Dr. Stan. Yourself?
No complaints at all.
Okay, speaking of the Constitution, which we recognize as being the supreme law of the land, is not recognized as the supreme law of the land by the current United States Supreme Court. When Stephen Byers and her name escapes me now.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Or you're talking about Sandra Day O'Connor?
I think it was Sandra Day O'Connor got up and said, the Constitution is no longer the supreme law of the land. We must be sensitive to the international community. That's treason.
Of course it is, but of course, why don't they simply impeach her? And it's because my senators bought and paid for, they wouldn't dare to come out and say what you would say or what I would say, and that this is that a fact that this woman is not fit to sit on the court, having expressed that belief, because she has sworn an oath to God that she will uphold the Constitution, and she didn't even believe in it. So she was lying, and if she would lie when she took her oath, can we believe anything else she would ever say?
That's true, but it wasn't her alone. It was Stephen Byers as well, and the rest of them believe it too.
Kennedy went right along with that.
Okay.
I'm talking about Justice Kennedy, and of course both Senator Day O'Connor and Justice Kennedy just happened to be appointed by Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm. They're all in it together, all of them. This is disgusting. We need to take our country back.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Sidney. The question is, what is the most efficient means? How do we get people off of their couches? How do we get them to be concerned enough to take the time to do the studying and then commit themselves in this truly epic struggle?
As you say, they've been lulled to sleep.
Okay, Jonathan, how would you respond to Ed? Certainly Ed is echoing your views.
Yeah, you know, actually, Ed and Stan and so many others of you out there, we all are on the same page, and it's true. And I might add one other thing. The Supreme Court that you were exampling there, that's the court that now believes it can do judicial legislation. Well, we do have the separation of the three branches of government, or I should say we did have the separation of the three branches of our government. We had the administration, the administrative end, we had the legislation, and we had the judicial. And they were to be in their separate areas, and that was very important. And now, of course, the courts, operating, with judges who are appointed to a lifetime tenure, where we have no control over them at all, where we can't vote them out if we don't like what they do, they now do judicial legislation. It means that the court itself is now a lawless body. It is operating against the law. They are a lawless body. How did we allow this to happen? How are we going to change it? Well, if enough people out there, I know I get really concerned and worked up about this, but you know, it's something that I believe in with a real genuine passion. I believe the same as a lot of our founding fathers did, that you have to get out there and fight for what you believe in. And that means getting on the website, if you will, or the book, or any of the other ways that you can learn about what to do. And believe me, there's a lot of things listed, a lot of ways in which you can get started. And I will help people to get started in their communities. You know, we're starting a whole series, as an example, from that website, a whole series of town meetings, American town meetings all over the country. We're starting them here in San Diego, California. We're going to have four of them here in this area, and there's a lot of others in other parts of the country that we're going to have. And this is one of the ways that we can bring these issues forward, get people on committees in the communities, and start to work. Because, you know, it all starts right where you live. It starts in your own neighborhood, in your own community, and then builds from there to the region and to the state, and then to the region of states, and then finally to the nation as a whole. That's the way you do this. And you know something? We can do it. And there is instruction, and there is help, and there is the tools available to help you to make this happen. But you've got to be willing to get going, roll up your sleeves, and say, okay, I'm going to get on the website. I'm going to find out about this stuff. I'm going to get in touch with you guys. I'm going to be part of the solution. Now, if all of you folks don't do that, well, goodbye, America.
Ed, did you have anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
Well, I think we are really in a crisis situation, and we need to do something. I think the situation that you're describing, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but that should have been done in the 30s.
No, but we can't worry about what should have been done in the 30s. We are here today, and we are certainly at a watershed time in our nation's history.
That's true. I absolutely agree. And I don't honestly have a solution in my mind now how to approach this, but this is very serious because we have lost our liberties. With this Homeland Tyranny Act and Treason Act 1 and Treason Act 2, we have no supreme law of the land anymore. Whatever the king says is the law.
Well, I think that what we have to understand is how we got into this situation, Ed. And if people really understood the background of what happened on 9/11, I think that it would be hopefully shocked enough to begin to understand that we are working against organized evil at the highest levels of government.
I agree.
Okay, anything else? Bye-bye. Anything else, Ed?
We're in God's hands, but we need to do something also.
All right, well, you join us in this epic struggle, and you go to Jonathan's website. I haven't been there, but go and see what he has to say, okay?
I will do.
Okay, and have you been to my website?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, God bless.
Thank you, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And would certainly invite your calls here. We've got about 5 more minutes before we have to let Jonathan go. And he certainly is an articulate spokesman for his position, and that is, every one of you out there in the listening audience has an obligation to be involved, and I believe that with all my heart. Because if there are not enough people who care about freedom, then freedom will fail, and freedom will be lost. And the dream that was once America will simply become a remembrance of things past. Well, Jonathan, we've got a few more minutes. What else would you like to cover?
Well, I know that some of the listeners are going to say, oh, boy, he does get worked up, doesn't he? And you know, I do. And as I said before, it's a passion with me. It's something I deeply believe in. But you know, when you do say, all right, I agree, these are problems, we got to do something, I can't imagine what we're going to do, but we've got to do something. Guess what? Get on the website, or get the book, or get something. Even if you don't get the book, you don't have to do that. You can just get on the website and learn from that, and you can get in touch with me with an email from that website, and because I don't, it isn't important whether I sell the book or not. It's important that we make changes. It's important that we make things right. And we have to get inside and do it the hard way, which is roll up your sleeves and get involved. It's participatory democracy. And remember this, there are so few people out there that will ever, ever do anything, that if we get a few thousand of you around the country to actually do something, you're going to make a change. People are going to wonder what happened, because most everybody are sleepwalking. They won't do anything. They say, oh, this is such a terrible problem. I just don't know what to do, but of course I can't do anything myself. That's what they keep saying. And guess what? It's the end of the story when they do that, and we've got to change that. And it won't take a large number, just a few thousand out of the millions. And why only just that number? And that's not many. I've gotten that many responses already with all the radio shows and all the emails and everything else. I've gotten several thousand responses already. Now, if only a few out of that number, and then there's a few thousand more coming in, and then a few more out of that number, and so on, we'll build a few thousand who actually will get involved. And if we do, and we start working intelligently to plan getting our groups together, starting American town meetings, and starting different groups around the country, and start moving toward solutions, real solutions. How about the legal system? Hey, have you ever needed a lawyer lately? I'll tell you something about that. If a lawyer takes a client, the first thing you should tell him is, how much justice can you afford? And if that's the case, because believe me, hundreds and hundreds of dollars an hour is what they charge now, and most people can't afford that. They can't afford justice. Well, if you can't afford justice, there is no justice. And it's the old story, if you want justice, you better just buy a dog and name him Justice, because that's the only way you're going to get it. Well, I'll tell you there's another way. Let's get back to where we once were. Let's bring things back. Let's change things and get back to what was originally intended. Let's make America work. Let's have an American renaissance.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's so vitally important that that we do the things that you're describing, because this is the only way we're going to begin to make a difference. But, of course, we have to understand not only the mechanics of this, but I believe the spiritual forces behind it. Jonathan West, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a very interesting hour. God bless you. Bye-bye, Jonathan.
Well, you know, that was wonderful. I'm awfully glad you gave me... I really cut loose, didn't I?
You sure did. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. This is Dr. Stan here. And of course, this is the time when we have to remind our listening audience that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you who listen to us on a regular basis for your help as we reach out across America on a regular basis, bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we are educating people on a regular basis, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'd love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like a free newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. My contention is we're truly involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. And what most people don't understand is there are spiritual forces behind the people on the other side. We can't understand the Supreme Court unless we understand that the Masonic influence in that court and the fact that the Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 or to 8-1 for a period of 30 years from 1941 to 1971. So we can rant and rave against the Supreme Court, but unless we understand that there's a secret society in the United States with over 2 million members, that six of our last presidents prior to George W. Bush either were members of the Masonic movement or were affiliated with it, why we can't understand this one aspect of what's going on. But it's not simply the Masons. The Council on Foreign Relations is there, the Bohemian Grove, the Skull and Bone Society, and a myriad of other organizations. The communists are here. They're working. They are their supporters. I call them all the Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me suggest that you get it, that you read it, or watch the video, or listen to the audio tape. But if you don't understand the true nature of the enemy, you can't understand where we're going. Now, we do have a 10-point program. And the first point in our program, is you better have a personal relationship with the Lord, because if you get into this truly spiritual battle and you don't have any spiritual backing on your side, on the good side, on God's side, you're going to be in real trouble. And I've been at this game long enough. I've seen so many people destroyed, their lives destroyed, their marriages is destroyed. You have to be on good terms with our Lord and put yourself in His hands when you enter the battle. And then, of course, you have to understand the foundations of our freedom, which is our Constitution. And we have books that go into that. The Institute of the Constitution does a great job of providing the information, but you can get that information from our four-tape set, The Foundations of Our Freedom. And then you need to understand what the bad guys are doing, and that, of course, has to do with the Brotherhood of Darkness and the understanding of the secret societies that do exist and do operate within our society. And then down the line, you're going to be involved in educating others. And the final point would be political involvement. But until you've done the other things and know what you believe in and who the enemy is and how to oppose him, why political involvement is an exercise in futility. I believe in political involvement. And fortunately, in our area, we have a group that is doing a great job of opposing our Board of Supervisors and our City Council and working to try to educate some of the people. But I think we're going to have the greatest opportunity in our lives to begin to reach people, because I think we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis unparalleled in history, and that it will be coming about within this next year or two at the very most. And so now is the time to try to reach as many people as we can. Those who have ears to listen will hear us. Many will not. That's not our problem. Our job is to be the watchman on the wall, to tell people what's going on, and if they don't listen, their blood and the blood of their families will be on their hands, because we're moving into violent times. Pray for America. Pray for our revival, because if we don't turn back to God, America will not survive. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so remember, the conspiracy conference is tomorrow over in Santa Clara. If you're going to be there, I'll see you.